for some here tonight, this message may be a shocking eye-opener. For others, it may be a reminder and a refresher. But in the culture in which you and I find ourselves, we can all use the challenge of these truths. I want to speak to you tonight on the subject, what is wrong with dating? The wise parent doesn't just seek to raise good children. The wise parent seeks to raise godly children whose lives are deeply committed to the Lord Jesus Christ. Luke chapter 1, verse 16 and 17 gives us the most essential ingredient of all in raising godly children. Verse 16 tells us that John the Baptist turned many of the children of Israel to the Lord their God. And then at the end of verse 17, it tells us that John did something that is absolutely necessary to get young people prepared for God to work in their lives. What was this powerful thing that John did? John the Baptist, under a mighty anointing similar to that which was upon Elijah the prophet, was able to get parents to knit their hearts with children so that the children in turn would surrender their hearts to their parents. That's a powerful and a beautiful thing. And he, John the Baptist, shall go before him, Jesus, in the spirit and power of Elias, referring to Elijah, to turn the hearts of the fathers to the children and the disobedient to the wisdom of the just. That is the essential ingredient in raising godly children. It is more important than teaching obedience, and that is important. It is more important than teaching respect, and that too is vitally important. It is every bit as important as protecting a child from evil, and that is incredibly important. Key word in verse 17 is that word just. A just parent is able to get and keep his child's heart, and with that relationship as a basis, the parent is then able to teach, correct, chasten, and discipline a naturally disobedient child until he becomes obedient. Now think carefully with me here. What parent who has his child's heart would not want to help his child make important decisions? And what child who has invested his heart with his parents would not want his parents' help in making whatever decisions he has to make? A child who has given his heart to his parents is naturally going to want to know, what do my parents think about any key situation in life? Is there a biblical example of a parent-child relationship where key decisions were made jointly? Yes, there is. In John 5:19, Jesus said, "Verily, verily, I say unto you, the Son can do nothing of Himself but what He seeth the Father do." John 5:30 says, "I can of mine own self do nothing. I seek not mine own will, but the will of the Father which hath sent me." What is the most important decision of human life outside of salvation? I think the answer is without a doubt that of finding God's choice for a life's mate. Can you name anything that has the impact on a human life that that decision has? A little boy leaned forward in his chair, anxious to be the first to answer the final Bible question in the Bible quiz and win the big prize. The pastor looked over his glasses with twinkling eyes at the squirming lad and asked the ultimate question. All the young people were listening carefully when the pastor said, "And what does our Lord say about a man and a woman who want to get married?" The boy launched his quivering hand toward the heavens, the momentum sweeping his tense body to his feet, and the smiling pastor looked at him and said, "And what is your answer, Sammy?" Sammy smiled confidently and said, "Jesus said, 'Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do.'" I've seen some young people who were dating, and frankly, when you looked at everything that was involved, you couldn't help but wonder, do they have any idea what they're doing? I've seen some young men and women who were engaged, and I couldn't help but wonder, do they have any idea what they're doing? I've witnessed some weddings, and I wouldn't have said anything audibly for the world, but I couldn't help but think to myself as I sat looking on, do they have any idea what they're doing? What's wrong? When relationships are superficial, and commitments are shallow, and marriages are shaky, and divorce is almost as common as marriage, and adultery is just another lifestyle, what's wrong? Isn't it time someone stopped and analyzed the situation and said, seriously, what is happening around us? What is going on? Could it be that much of the blame for many of these problems should be laid at the feet of an unscriptural 20th century American phenomenon called dating? According to one encyclopedia article I read, said something like this, and I'm paraphrasing the article. It said, dating came into prominence in the 20th century on the heels of the women's rights movements, the growth of cities, that is, city life versus country life, the decline of strong parental authority, the advent of the automobile, and the less modest clothing of young ladies. Now, that was not a Christian writing, that as far as I know. As far as I know, it was just a secular writer writing an encyclopedia article. But isn't it interesting how that historian viewed the origin of dating? I believe that if you keep an open mind long enough to analyze dating with me, you'll agree with me that this deeply ingrained custom of ours in America is not God's best. In fact, there are some very serious problems with dating. What is wrong with dating? Number one, it either deletes or dilutes parental involvement. It either deletes or dilutes parental involvement. I could probably say that dating deletes or dilutes parental authority. Now, since words mean different things to different people, allow me to define my terms. I'm aware someone could be dating, doing the right thing, and still be calling it dating. So here's the way I define dating. An unbiblical custom that grows out of the boyfriend-girlfriend concepts of our day. A boy and a girl who are interested in each other, cultivate that interest by planning special times they can be together, often alone. Ben and Candace Graham from Benton, Arkansas, were married May 15, 1999, without dating. Ben is the son of Pastor Ken Graham and met Candace's parents while preaching in a church 8 hours away in St. Joseph, Missouri. I sent a questionnaire to them, along with a lot of other people, as I've been researching the last few months. And one of the things that I ask in the questionnaire is, what is your definition of dating? Ben and Candace wrote this as their definition of dating: someone trying an individual out emotionally, and if the emotion runs out, move to someone else. Israel and Brooke Wayne from Michigan have one of the most clear, powerful testimonies concerning getting to the marriage altar of anyone I have ever heard. They were married January 23rd, 1999, without ever dating anyone else and without ever having any other girlfriends or boyfriends in their entire lives. They lived 1,700 miles apart, and theirs was definitely not an arranged marriage. They also did not touch or kiss until they got to the marriage altar. Israel was 23, Brooke was 20 when they were married, and the time from the time that they decided it was right until the time they got married was, about four and a half months. Israel is a very wise young man, 23 years of age. His wisdom is phenomenal. In fact, he is the assistant editor of a nationwide Christian magazine. In one of his articles, he defined dating like this. He said, dating is a non-committed form of emotional promiscuity where one is romantically involved with someone whom they have no certainty and often no intention of marrying. In most homes, it does not require the blessing or permission of the parents, and it is often unsupervised and unchaperoned. So what happens when parents find out that their son or daughter is liking someone whom they cannot approve as acceptable? Well, dating deletes or dilutes parental authority and involvement, so parents at that point are no longer wise authority figures, but instead are viewed as ignorant busybodies who don't really understand what's going on and are poking their noses where they don't belong. I have an article here from several years ago. It's entitled, Dating's Kids Stuff for Some. An 11-year-old boy announced to his mother that he had a date to take his girlfriend to the theater to see a movie. The mother's response was, girlfriend? Date? 11 years old? This family that lives in Demorest, New Jersey, about 8 miles northwest of Manhattan, said dating is not uncommon among children 10 and 11 years old in her community. Now note the underlying thinking here. As soon as children, whatever age they may be, begin to think of dating, they think of it as their area and not their parents. It's an area that is typically viewed by young people as being off limits for parents. And the age doesn't seem to matter. 11 years old, 14 years old, 15, 16, 17, 20, 25, whatever age it may be. Number two, dating exposes young people to some terrible dangers. Let me list some of those dangers for you. First of all, dating is a threat to purity. What do I mean by that? I mean very simply that it's dangerous for two young people to be alone together. Now, of course, that's a common occurrence in our day. It's very much just the accepted thing that people do. Do I have scripture for my position? I believe I do. Romans 13:14 says, "But put ye on the Lord Jesus Christ, and make not provision for the flesh." Notice that. Don't give the flesh a chance, is what it means. In the Lord's Prayer, Jesus said that we should pray, "Lead us not into temptation." Something that we should pray every day, something on my prayer list I try to pray every day, is that the Lord would keep me away from temptation. In Matthew 26:41, Jesus said, "Watch and pray that you enter not into temptation. The spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh is weak." Now let me tell you something about your flesh. Your flesh is weak. You don't need to look at anybody else. Just think about yourself. Your flesh is weak. You say, "I'm a dedicated Christian." That's wonderful. I'm glad you are. Your flesh is weak. You say, "I love the Lord. I go to church. I read the Bible." I'm glad you do. I hope you grow in the Lord and become mighty in spirit. I hope you do wonderful things for God. And I'm going to tell you, your flesh is weak. You will never grow spiritually to the place you can trust the flesh. I've had people say, "Brother Davis, you mean you don't trust your daughters?" Oh, I do trust my daughters. I would trust my daughters with my life in a moment. I'm sure I would die for them. I think they would die for me. Do I trust their flesh? No. I must not trust their flesh. Y'all know my children, their mates and my grandchildren. My first son-in-law is named Daniel. I watched him while he and my daughter, Dawn, were in a special betrothal relationship before they got married. Now, there were several things about their relationship that we would do differently if we had to do over again, but there were several things that were really somewhat ideal about their relationship. I don't know that I'm going to go into it right now, but there were several things that were involved that were pretty ideal. But you know, one of the things that happened with their relationship, I think Daniel wondered sometime if I was going to follow him around after he and Dawn got married. I could notice it. I could see it in his eyes. Finally, I sat down and talked to him and explained to him that I would not be following him around after he got married. But he might have thought that before they were married because we were so protective at that time. Either myself or some other adult was with them all the time. I mean, all the time. I mean, all the time. Chad and Heidi Eves from the state of Michigan had a testimony back into the marriage altar that was broadcast on NBC News Dateline, and it is also a tremendous, tremendous testimony about how to get to the marriage altar. NBC News followed them through the mall and showed that here was a couple that were old enough to get married, that were close to getting married, and there was always somebody with them all the way until they got married. Daniel and Dawn, Daniel was 23, Dawn was 19. You say, "These young people you're talking about, they're adults. Can't they be trusted?" Yeah, they can be trusted, but not the flesh. You don't trust the flesh. It's not wise to trust the flesh. A fellow had a son who was upset when his father would not permit him to go out alone in a car with a girl. The boy said, "What's wrong, Dad? Don't you trust me?" His dad replied, "In a car, alone, at night, with a girl? I wouldn't trust me, son. Why should I trust you?" Amen. A girl's parents were leaders in their church. When she hit 13, the parental rule rolled right into place. No dating before 16. Then in the spring of ninth grade, at the age 14, she begged her mom and dad to let her go out with a boy who had just turned 16, had his driver's license, and was going to be moving away. An hour and a half of time away from the house seemed logical and safe. Surely there wouldn't be any problem with that. The boys were members, the boy's family were members of the same church. He was regularly involved with youth activities. What could possibly go wrong? It was an hour and a half that had not ended years later. The two teenagers got intimately involved in that time away from their parents. Probably no one will know everything that happened, but everything changed. The girl was shattered, humiliated, and confused. She got home and blurted out everything to her mother, which incidentally is what she should have done. The boy, confronted by his own mother after a phone call from the girl's parents, admitted what happened and then exploded with these words, "Mama, that girl is nothing but a blank and a blank." And he used two filthy words that I'd just rather not use tonight. Thus, two young lives were irreparably damaged for the rest of their earthly stay. And those hurts would not have had to be if someone had realized that dating is a threat to purity. $100 million were spent in the state of Illinois in a previous 8-year period to combat teenage pregnancy. They felt like they had to do something. The government said, "We got to do something." When they got done, they did a little research and found out they couldn't tell it had done any good at all. Why? Because they were going about it the wrong way. You can spend all the money you want to trying to correct the problem of teenage pregnancy, but as long as we continue in our society saying we have no problem with our boys and girls spending time together alone, we trust them, we're going to continue to have teenage unwed mothers. Think about the examples that are given to us in the Bible. Noah was the great preacher of righteousness used by God to deliver his family from the flood. But he wasn't careful enough with the flesh, and he wound up drunk. Judah got wickedly involved with his own daughter-in-law. Samson was involved with at least 3 or 4 Philistine women. And David sat on his rooftop and lusted after Bathsheba and then invited her to his house. Now, if you cannot trust the flesh of a judge of Israel like Samson, how can you trust the flesh of a teenager? If you can't trust the flesh of a man of God after God's own heart like David, how can you trust the flesh of a teenager? I love the way people in our church continue to encourage me in this area and help me, not only as a pastor, but as a father. You know, statistics say that 1 out of 4 university girls have been involved in date rape. Notice the term, date rape. Do you really think that date rape would occur if parents were present? I think it would wipe it out completely, don't you? In late 1997, 2 studies found that 25% of adolescent girls in the United States had been sexually or physically abused or had been forced against their will. A late 1995 poll found that 40% of girls between the ages of 14 and 17 said they knew someone who had been hit or beaten by a boyfriend. I could add here that some people are still technically virgins, but that's all. They've already necked, petted, and done everything but totally lose their purity. And I cringe at the thought of how many more sweet, godly, dedicated Christian boys and girls are going to lose their virtue before pastors and parents and churches wake up and realize that dating is indeed a threat to purity. Secondly, dating is dangerous. It is a threat to emotional stability. Now, here's what I mean by that. Dating, by its very nature, promotes feelings of rejection and low self-esteem. What happens if everybody has a boyfriend except your daughter? How would she feel? What would it be like if everybody had a date young man except you? What happens to a young man when a girl turns him down when he asks for a date? I read where one young man was attracted to a waitress. So he summoned up his courage and asked her for her phone number. When he called the number later, a voice answered, "Pest control service." Now that's humorous, but it's also hurtful. Think about that fella and what he thought then. It's amazing to me how many young people, as I've preached this in different places, begin to relate to this message. Young people, not necessarily like our young people, have heard lots of preaching against the boyfriend-girlfriend game and the dating game and so on. But young people in other places who have never heard any of that, when I get to this point, this is where they begin to sit up. I've had young people who scowled at me as I talked about purity. Like, big deal. But then when I start talking about rejection, I want to tell you something. You play the dating game, get yourself set up right now for big time emotional problems. I'm talking about real inner pain. Even mature adults have trouble dealing with rejection. If you just walk into church tonight and somebody doesn't accept you, if somebody snubs you, you have problems with that. How much more dangerous is it for teenagers whose emotions are not yet fully matured? I'm thinking right now about a 12-year-old girl who had a crush on a boy. He liked another girl. Because of her feelings of rejection, this girl accused the boy and his friend of raping her. They were arrested and put in jail. One of them faced charges that would have kept him in jail until 30 years of age. The other faced charges that would have kept him in jail until 21 years of age. Then the girl realized what a mess she'd gotten herself into and admitted that it was all false. She was then arrested and put in a juvenile detention center, and her parents were told, either you will find a permanent place for this girl or we will. I'm thinking of a 17-year-old boy who was at public high school with his girlfriend. She broke up with him and walked away with another boy. The 17-year-old boy, stung by feelings of rejection, went home, pulled out a shotgun, and committed suicide. I'm saying dating is a threat to emotional stability. In May of 1992, a 14-year-old boy stood in a high school in Oklahoma City, pulled out a gun, and shot a 17-year-old boy in the head. It was over a girl. Here's what he said. If I hadn't shot him in the head, he might have shot me. Besides, that's the way they do it on TV. In February of 1994, I heard a news broadcast that said Atlanta police were looking for a 12-year-old girl accused of shooting a 13-year-old girl in the neck over a boy. It's easy to fill in the blank, isn't it? In Hillsboro, Missouri, the uncle of a 14-year-old girl accused of stabbing her mother to death with a kitchen knife said she was angry at her parents for trying to keep her from her boyfriend. In St. Louis, Missouri, an 18-year-old high school girl was sentenced to life in prison for the shooting death of her ex-boyfriend in a school hallway after he dumped her about 2 weeks before the shooting. In Peoria, Illinois, a 19-year-old man was sentenced to 52 years in prison for the execution-style shooting of a 15-year-old in a dispute over a girl. And you know, I could go on like that for the next 10 to 15 minutes very easily. I have a file that I've been gathering for years that is full of stories like that. Let me just give you one more story. This letter is dated July the 4th, 1997. Listen to me. It came from the state of Mississippi. I'd been speaking at a camp, and somebody came up to me after the camp, shared some thoughts with me, and I asked them to send me the information on it, and they did. On August the 18th, 1996, 14-year-old Josh Miller from Canton, Mississippi, stood in the yard of Olo Baptist Church and shot 13-year-old Kristen Altman in the face with a 12-gauge shotgun. Several teens witnessed the shooting and were called as witnesses for the prosecution. Here are the articles I'm holding in my hands. Here's pictures of the girl's father and mother at the boy's trial. The pathologist testified Kristen was hit at almost point-blank range with a blast to her mouth and nose. July 3rd, 1997. The trial lasted only 3 days. It began July the 1st, and he was sentenced to life in prison, July the 3rd, 97, which means he will not be eligible for parole until he turns 65 years of age. He will serve at least 51 years in prison. A note that Miller wrote and handed to deputies the night of the murder read like this: I loved her, but she didn't love me. This is a 14-year-old and a 13-year-old, folks. I loved her, but she didn't love me. She hurt me, and I couldn't take it. If she can't be mine, she can't be anybody's. And if we have anybody around here who still feels like it's a terrible place to be because we're against dating, just be aware. This is the kind of thing that we're trying to spare ourselves from. Dating is not only a threat to emotional stability, dating is a threat to spiritual growth. Really, no other time in a person's life, listen to me, young people, no other time in your lives when spiritual growth is as important as the time of your youth. If you're not spiritually growing right now, you are wasting your life big time. The Bible spells that out in Ecclesiastes 12:1 when it says, "Remember now thy Creator in the days of thy youth." It is the time for young people to be growing in the Lord, thinking about God, building their faith and their trust in God. Have you noticed? Have you seen it? You find young people who get involved in the dating game, everything else seems to take a back seat. It becomes an all-consuming compassion. Boys will talk about how cute a girl is. Sometimes even Christian boys will talk about things that they wish they could do with some young lady. Girls will have other girls over to spend the night, and then all night long they talk about the Lord. All night long they'll talk about boys, boys, boys. Dating is a threat to spiritual growth. Fourth, dating is a threat to spiritual fellowship. If you've been in many churches, and you've probably seen what I'm about to describe. I'm talking about divisions in a youth group because Johnny used to like Susie, but now he likes Sally. This week he switched back, and now there are conflicts between the two girls, and the whole youth group is choosing sides. See, we're talking about spiritual growth, but that's the point. There's no such thing as spiritual growth as long as there are divisions like that. In fact, those divisions are the reason that when we've gone with our basketball team and volleyball team to other places to play other teams, that other coaches have come up to our leaders and said to our leaders, "How do you get your guys to cheer for the girls on the volleyball team?" Our guys won't do that. Do you know what the difference is? This is the difference. Because when you got those divisions, you can't have everybody cheering on and encouraging each other because their focus is not on building one another. They are actually tearing each other down. Then you get the parents of the squabbling teens involved, and you talk about battles really getting bloody. They really can. A pastor friend wrote this. He said, "Recently I witnessed a breakup in the parking lot of our church. Two 16-year-olds were fighting like cats and dogs. Her head was hanging to hide the tears while he looked down upon her with obvious displeasure as he barked orders like a master to his dog. The last time I'd seen a scene like this was in the parking lot of a local tavern. My heart went out to both these young people as well as our Christian youth in general." One of our men asked about the difference in worldly dating and Christian dating, replied, "Christians are supposed to know better." Fifth, not only is dating a threat to purity, to emotional stability, to spiritual growth, to spiritual fellowship, dating is a threat to future happiness. It is a threat to future happiness because many times young people prematurely give their emotions to someone who is not God's choice for their life's mate. Now you might think, well, it's just emotions, but shouldn't emotions be kept for that person you marry as well if possible? Parents, listen to me here. Even if you think that the dating game might be all right, or even if Christian dating might be all right, have you seen the stress that a concerned parent goes through when his child develops a serious relationship with the wrong person? And that child is so crazy in love that he loses all good sense. Have you seen that? It has happened. It is happening. A person's emotions can get so involved that their mind and will don't function properly anymore. After I preached the message on 7 Bible truths violated by Christian dating some number of months back, I got a letter from a graduate of a Bible college. This was a lady writing to me, telling me her story. I'm not going to tell the whole story tonight. She told me I could share as much as I wanted to. She said that she and her husband went through the whole dating game and got married, and then they started a church, and that he was one of the up and coming conservative, Bible-believing preachers that was expected to build one of the great churches of America. But she said, the way we got to the marriage altar was such a mess. She said, everybody thought everything was fine. She said, it wasn't fine. Even though we were at Bible college, it wasn't fine. And she proceeded to describe to me the whole thing and how it all wound up in a divorce court with the church going completely out of business and the nightmare testimony. And she said, Brother Davis, whatever you do, no matter what anybody says, you continue to preach what you're dating. She says, it's one of the worst nightmares that I've ever been through in my life. And then she told me about her sister, who had also gone through Bible college and refused to get into the dating game, no matter what anybody said, because she said, I'm just not going to do it. And everybody kept saying, you'll never get married, you'll never get married. And she wound up going back to the mission field with her parents, where God let her meet the one that she was supposed to marry. They got married and are serving God on that mission field. One of our good men wrote this. He said, dating is like a princess going through the woods kissing frogs in hopes of finding a prince. She may find a prince. Most likely she'll grow to like kissing frogs so much, she'll end up marrying one of them. You can develop too serious a relationship with the wrong person, or you can develop a relationship seriously too soon with the right person. Here's a young person at 15 or 16, and they're dating the one who is God's choice for their life's mate. Or even 17 or 18 if they're not really ready to get married. Even if they're freshmen in college, the question must be this: are they ready to get married? A few months pass, they're really close, both of them feel like they're ready to get married. It does happen. So what are they going to do? Are they going to get married? Are they going to break up? Some of those godly young people that I've known over the years have lost their purity because of the pressure of a situation like the one I just described for you. Number six, dating is a threat to having a strong, happy marriage. Not only a threat to purity, emotional stability, spiritual growth, spiritual fellowship, future happiness, but a threat to having a strong, happy marriage. Most couples who go through the dating game and then get married have to live with all the hugging and kissing and who knows what else went on with who knows who all. Did you ever realize God didn't make a dozen girls for Adam to have a good time with before he married Eve? Dating is dangerous. Third, dating involves deceitfulness. To put it simply, young people will often put on a front, trying to impress their date and get them to like them. I mean, they're just coming across just more wonderful than they really are. You ever see it? You ever seen a girl with a rotten attitude who all at once becomes incredibly sweet around a guy? Do you ever see a boy who is so disrespectful to his mom that it's absurd and all at once he's so nice and kind and gentle and sweet and respectful? How many girls act the same way around their date that they act around their dad? Here's a typical dating situation in the world. Johnny coming over to Susie's house to pick her up for a date to go to the dance. Johnny doesn't hear the conversation, but just before he gets there, Susie and her dad are having it out, and dad is saying, Susie, you are going to be home at 10:30, and Susie sasses back, Dad, nobody but nerds get home at 10:30. You're being ridiculous and unfair as usual. And there comes a knock on the door. And with sugar and spice and everything nice, Susie croons, oh, Johnny, so glad you're here. I'll be ready in just a minute. Dad and I were just having a little conversation, that's all. Now, who's the real girl? Would the real Susie please stand up? The real girl is the one sassing her dad. And if Johnny marries her, he'll find it out really fast. Now, since these people are putting on a front, they both wind up with someone different than they thought they were getting. How many times you ever hear a statement like this? How many of y'all ever heard a statement like this? Well, he's just not the same person I married. How many of you ever heard that? Come on, let me see your hand. All over the house, sure. It's like some people marry two people. The person they think they're marrying and the person they really marry. Everyone is looking for an ideal. But instead, they marry a raw deal. Now their marriage is an ordeal. And they're looking for a new deal. Number four, dating is not biblical. You can't find it in the Bible. You can't find it. I know our culture is filled with it, but it's not in the Bible. It's not there in word. It's not there in example. It's not there in principle. Fifth, dating violates several key biblical principles. Number one, the motive is wrong. What is a proper biblical motive? To give of yourself, to serve others. The motive of dating is self-indulgence, to have a good time. Did you know that the person who doesn't need to get married makes a better mate than the one who feels like he just has to get married? You see, the person who has to get married will sap a relationship dry. The person who doesn't need to get married but recognizes that it is God's will and is willing to give of himself is more likely to be able to build a strong marriage. He'll keep putting things into the marriage so that there's always things to be drawn out. Not only is the motive wrong, but the goal of dating is wrong. The goal of pleasure instead of commitment. I read where one preacher said, if it's just the company of the opposite sex you're after and not sexual stimulation, won't you just hold your sister's hand? The motive is wrong. The goal of dating is wrong. Third, the idea of dating is wrong. The idea is to trust human nature. I want to tell you, there'll never be a time in your life when you can trust human nature. Before marriage, during marriage, you can't trust human nature. Anyone who trusts the flesh will eventually wind up in trouble. Fourth, the results are wrong. Take a good look at the results of dating all around us. The hurts, the pain, the heartache, the loss of purity, the destruction of marriages and homes. Whenever you examine the fruit of something godly, it is always good fruit. Number six, dating follows no biblical pattern. Many men and women in the Bible who got married, none of them dated. Check it out. None of them. You just don't have it in the Bible. It follows no biblical pattern. Number seven, dating is a proven failure historically and socially. Up until a few decades ago, you'd have been hard-pressed to find anything like dating anywhere in the world, including the United States of America. Though there were some generations before us, going clear back into the 1700s, and then it started accelerating in the 1800s with the concept of a marriage built upon romantic love. And then it got worse in the 1900s and until about 1930 to 1950 is where it really began to accelerate into what we have in our day. A few years ago, I visited Papua New Guinea and Guyana, South America. Missionaries in both those countries told me dating was not practiced in their countries. Occasionally, they said, though, the influence of the United States had come through and a couple would try dating. It's interesting what the missionaries in both those countries told me without knowing what the other one was saying. They said this, couples who date here almost always start living together without getting married. But Brother Davis, dating is such a wonderful thing. I've heard it. Really? Reminds me of what General Schwarzkopf said when he was asked what he thought about Saddam Hussein as a military man. You remember it? Well, he's neither a strategist, nor is he a tactician, nor is he a general, nor is he a soldier. Other than that, he's a great military man. I want you to know that. Dating is really wonderful, isn't it? It ruins parent-child relationships. It isn't safe for children's purity. It fosters rejection and emotional instability. It stunts spiritual growth. It destroys spiritual fellowship. It damages future happiness. It undermines strong marriages. It violates biblical principles. It follows no biblical pattern. It is a historical and social fluke. It is perpetuating all kinds of problems in our culture. Outside of that, I'd like you to know, dating is really a wonderful thing. You would be hard-pressed, folks, to find any person who follows the world's traditional dating patterns who does not have some scars as a result. I've talked to enough people who even follow Christian dating patterns who have lots of scars to show for it. Say, Brother Davis, aren't you preaching something new and unusual, unique and different when you preach about something besides dating? No, if you look in the Bible, there's something as old as the creation and as young as the last few weeks and months. In the Bible are clearly presented four key pattern principles that I'll be given in the message, God's plan for finding a mate, that every person in the world ought to follow to get to the marriage altar. Christians and lost people, everybody ought to follow it. It makes good sense. No, everybody ought to do those four pattern principles. I'll also be sharing the phenomenal testimonies of several couples who have followed those pattern principles and the impact that their lives have had on others. Before that, I'm going to be preaching the message on Bible principles that relate to getting to the marriage altar. But I want to wind up by saying to you, dating hadn't been around that long, really. Dating is the new kid on the block. And he's not a nice guy either. In fact, he's a bully that somebody needs to get moved out of our neighborhoods. Would you bow with me, please?